Hello.
Hello.
Yay!
Oh my gosh. every time that we tried and you couldn't hear me, I was like, hello.
I don't know what is happening. My computer just does no sound or something.
1983 is happening, Christy. No offense, but that's what's happening. Guys, well, we tried to do this. This was our fourth go.
We were
the problem, which we probably were, because I'm 82, so I was probably also the problem.
I'm positive that I'm the problem, but I don't know what the problem is. It's so weird. It's exactly what I did last week.
Oh well.
Life happens. It's okay.
It's okay, because I have almost finished making my drink for tonight.
I have not.
I was like, I'm going to just start while I'm trying to connect to this podcast.
Okay. So let me get out all of my juices that I'm going to carefully mix together.
Welcome, everybody, to Theology on the Rocks.
And hi!
The exciting event that is called, we didn't plan ahead on a recipe before we picked this drink.
Well, we knew. It's just that people have different versions. It is a drink. The drink was suggested to us by an Instagram friend, Elizabeth.
Yes, thank you. We're excited about this one, too.
Actually, my Instagram friend. Sorry.
Your Instagram friend.
Sorry, Theology on the Rocks. But she said, because it's Memorial Day weekend, the start of the summer, amongst, you know, other honorable things, that we should drink a summer drink. And so
rum punch it is.
Rum punch is what we're doing.
Which
feels summery. I'm here for it.
It does feel summery. I'm excited about it. I even got cherries to put in it. Because I was like,
Christy, we need to tell the secret. Is that I'm trying to find some sort of pirate themed glass. I'm all about the glasses.
Oh, yeah.
But I use my skull glass.
You use the skull glass already.
I know.
I went ahead and ordered, the recipe called for pineapple juice, fresh squeezed orange juice, fresh squeezed lime juice, grenadine.
It's an insane amount of things.
Coconut rum and dark rum, and then maraschino cherries to garnish. And so I have all of those things except for the grenadine, and I
I do as well, but I just,
except none of them are fresh squeezed. Let's be very real that they're, all of these things are coming out of bottles. So
mine's Tropicana, and it just happened to have Tropicana. All of those juices in it. Now here's the question: should I drink from the Atlanta Braves glass? Because yes, Braves fan, clearly,
right?
And or I have a red, white, and blue glass. That's a toughie. Actually, this one's a spider glass. Never mind.
A spider glass.
it's glitter, but I think it's, anyway, whatever. you all will find out about my loving of Halloween later on. I have a lot of just Halloween paraphernalia in July,
in general.
Yeah. I'm gonna go with the Braves mug because the spider glass is not as patriotic as I thought it was. So.
Well, I have a Colorado glass, which I thought was very on brand for me.
So one thing I've learned about, and you guys will know this if you're from there, because this relates to one of the questions we got asked as I'm making this, actually, I can ask you. It was an anonymous question, again, on my Instagram. Sorry.
An anonymous question.
Well, I know who they are.
I mean, I'm sure you do.
anonymous to you all. Oh, I have North Carolina rum.
Wait. Oh, hey.
Okay, before I go into this rant about where people are from, I have gold rum. That's tequila. Never mind, that's not right at all.
Tequila. That's wrong. That's the wrong liquor.
I got Kill Devil Hills is a place in the Outer Banks in North Carolina. And I have the rum. I might be winning the liquor portion of this today. Got the local.
You absolutely are, because I use Malibu.
from the shores of Malibu.
From the shores of Malibu.
One of the things that I've learned is that people from Colorado, like maybe being from the South, like we like
it's the same.
Yeah, but it's like the general region.
Yeah.
And like I love Georgia sports, but like, you know, affinity for Georgia is at a moderate level. People from Colorado love Colorado. Like they love the state.
Why would you not? We love Colorado.
I can name a few reasons having been there in November. Where I slid and almost hurt myself, like, very desperately.
Leah's first Colorado experience was pre our friendship. She had some ice issues, would you say?
I mean, there was a lot of issues.
And then there were some...
Some drinking issues, some brain issues,
some altitude, air. Maybe. Nobody walking. I say this, it was pre our friendship, but it was also our first meeting.
Oh yeah. Because apparently I was a jerk. Sorry. I probably was just aloof because I was in a high level extrovert situation, but also probably drinking whiskey because it was the Scottish reception.
So. One of the greatest parts about the National Conference for the American Academy of Religion are the receptions. Maybe the greatest part, like the whole reason for going is to go to receptions.
I would say that, yes.
And the Scottish uni reception is fantastic. And I had gone and I ran into my supervisor, Heather, and she was talking to Leah.
Because we had worked together at Glasgow University, yes. And Christy was there.
And I was studying at Glasgow under Heather. And so my friends had told me that you would be there. They were like, Leah Robinson, she's our friend. We love her. And particularly our friend Meg, who was in your wedding, I might add.
She was. She absolutely was.
And so I go up to Heather and I'm hi. And she's like, hello. And she introduces me to Leah. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, you're Leah Robinson. Meg McDonald told me all about you and told me to come find you. And the absolute blank stare I got back. wasn't even you were a jerk. It just, I really felt like you didn't actually know Meg. And you were like, oh, okay. And you're like, you were trying to be polite, but you didn't know what I was talking about. And then you were like, okay, well, I gotta go. And I was just like, oh man, I must have really overestimated how well they know each other.
Oh no.
Oh, but no,
that sucks. I'm like, can't take that one back, but it's a funny story. And two, I will say, I think the confusion was probably that I didn't know you. It wasn't that I didn't know her.
Yeah, you were just like, who is this person talking to me right now?
yeah.
No one is sober at that reception, so it's not.
Oh, I 100% was drinking whiskey.
It's not the place to go up to somebody and just kind of. And the bad part about when I'm drunk or drinking and excited is that I get like even friendlier than I am in a normal instance, and so I want to be best friends with everyone around me.
Well, look, we got there in the end. Sorry. Sorry, I was a freaking jerk. Drunk nope. Jerk. Nope. I want another thing of whiskey ice.
Do you have ice this time?
I had ice the last time. They're just in these insane square cubes. And instead of filling up all the rest of them, I'm just filling up this one thing. I don't know why. And it's confusing and whatever.
It's hard. Well,
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, our sincere, we're so freaking sorry for the lateness. I couldn't breathe. Nobody needed to hear me sneeze for an hour. So
also, I was just.
We've come back.
Slowly wasting away in non-physical ways. So, sometimes. Oi!
Go we've Cats. Returned. We're back to regularly scheduled programming. Thanks for sticking out the 2 extra days waiting for us. But we have great news.
Yep. I don't know it, but I believe it.
You do know it. We're on all of the platforms now.
Oh, that is great news.
So if you're listening to this on Spotify and you're like, all I've wanted in my life is to listen to Theology on the Rocks on a different podcast platform, you go right ahead. We're on them all.
And we can thank Christy for that.
We can thank me.
I thought I was waiting and I was like, gosh, they're taking a long time. We're so legit.
We needed to click that publish button.
I know. We're one click away.
One click away.
And by here we were
just thinking that our fans didn't love us, but it's not true.
It's not true.
And our fans do love us.
Yes. And if you happen to go to AAR, we'll be there.
Yeah. And join us at that Scottish Uni reception.
I can't say that I won't look at you the way I looked at Christy, though.
We will be
I'm sorry.
Confused about everything.
But we'll be having a good time. And at least we won't be slipping on ice because it's not in Denver for once.
It feels like not in Denver. It's in San Antonio.
Uh-huh.
Fine.
Hey, how many shots did you put in this?
I put 3.
Ooh. Okay. That's the kind of party we're having tonight. That's fun.
That's the kind of party. Well,
hey,
it's
good.
The summer. It's Memorial Day weekend.
And I'm doing absolutely nothing except watching everyone's animals who are going out of town.
So. Yeah. I'm not even doing that. I'm just going... what I'm doing is rewatching the entirety of Ted Lasso.
What, the whole of it?
The whole thing. I started with episode 1, the pilot, today because the last episode comes out this week and I want to watch the whole thing in preparation.
Gosh.
I know.
That's a lot, but also not as much as like Criminal Minds or whatever. Or not. What is it?
Supernatural.
Well, that too.
Criminal Minds also. They're both like 15 seasons.
I know. I was like, ooh. And then I'm like, well, I mean, there's worse options.
There's worse things you could do. Yeah.
Okay. I think I'm ready. I have a giant straw.
Ooh, me too. I'm ready. Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers to Tropicana.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's not bad.
Oh, that was a lot of gin rum. What is
you
it?
Don't need the gin.
Ooh, I could have not done 3. If you're following along, listeners, and we encourage you to make the drinks with us because things will make more sense if you do really. That.
I know, really, everybody should be drinking.
Unless you don't, and then you can just drink what we have without that. Like, you could have just had Mountain Dew the first week.
Yeah, you would have been so much happier, probably.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Maybe.
You could just have fruit punch.
Oh, my gosh. Did you hear that?
Yes, I did. What was that?
What do you think? I'll give you 2 guesses.
Did you shake it again?
No, I did not.
Was it Beethoven?
Yep. I knew you'd get it in 2. I have a deaf cat that's pure white and looks angelic and could not be more of a trained assassin. Like he is
chaos so, embodied.
He's chaos embodied. And like everyone's like, well, that's all cats. My other 2 cats are lazy as and they just lay around. This cat is like, I'm gonna watch the world burn and you get to watch it with me.
I love Beethoven so much, but he is never allowed in my home.
There'd be nothing left. You know what nothing. That was? That crash that you heard? That was my wedding photos. No big deal. He just decided he didn't like those guys. Anymore.
Nope.
He never picks. And when I said no cat in the very beginning, if you listen back, you'll hear it. That was him scratching my couch, which was not cheap.
No.
He can't pick, I don't know, like the pillows from Target, but he can
never do.
Pick my wedding pictures.
They never do.
This is amazing. I'm really happy with this. Thank you, Elizabeth. So, appreciate it.
Thank you, Elizabeth. This is a great suggestion. I love it. I'm going to have more of it.
I feel like we really started low. It's like having a really crappy boyfriend, the first boyfriend you ever have.
We started with our first ever boyfriend. What was your first ever boyfriend's name?
Boyfriend? probably Adam. That's very weird because it's the first person.
It is. we can discuss that further.
I could say he had a, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll just say that. I don't think he follows me on anything, so I can say it.
Mine does not. He friended me on Facebook for like 2 years.
Mm.
And then he unfriended me.
I think that happened to me. But I don't know. Like, I didn't talk to the person. So
it was very strange.
There's clearly some, like, behind the scenes things happening.
I was like,
I didn't even, it's like you friend, and like, I didn't even do the wave. It was just like, we're friends now.
His name is Dustin.
Okay.
Dustin, nobody liked him. Literally nobody liked Dustin.
God, let's hope Dustin's not listening to the podcast. Let me clarify, there were lots of people who liked Adam. So. That's good. We simply were high school sweethearts.
I liked Dustin, obviously, but
why did no one else like Dustin?
Well, there were a plethora of reasons.
Chrissy has really good taste.
I have, guys.
And this is not being a mean.
No, it's like
it's kind of her badge of honor.
It's factual. I have terrible taste, and Dustin started it off really. And to be honest, when he friended me on Facebook, which was so many years later, I mean, truly so many years later, I got a text from every single human being that I knew when I was dating him saying, "Why did you just friend Dustin on Facebook? Please don't get back together with him." And I was like,
"Poor Dustin. Dustin, I'm sorry, but what happened?
Do you genuinely think I'm going to start dating this guy again? I haven't spoken to him in so many years." And no, we never interacted. Like, he friended me on Facebook. We never interacted. And then, like, 2 years later, I looked and he had defriended me. And I don't know why.
Same. I don't either.
I was like, maybe that was so strange.
And I barely do anything on Facebook anyway, other than like, I keep like reposting old postings because I don't want to lose them.
Yes.
So what
I do that a lot.
Yeah, but that's pretty much like my Facebook. And then events.
Facebook is really curated for like my mom.
Mm.
it's where I share things that like she also wants to see.
Yeah. I should probably do that. My Kathy would probably appreciate that. So
your Kathy would appreciate it.
And there's nothing on there. I mean, it's just because we grew up. I think we made a lot of our mistakes in the pre-social media days. Oh,
absolutely. Days. So yeah, pre-Facebook is when I don't want those pictures up anyway. So
those pictures are in somebody's shoebox somewhere. They're in Dustin's shoebox, which they're is what in Dustin's happened.
Shoebox.
Some new girlfriend unearthed them and said, "You better get her off that Facebook."
Who is this girl?
No. So I'm going to take my drink to the table, which tells me that it's time to talk theology.
Oh, what yeah.
Think?
I like it.
And by the table, I mean my trashed couch. So we had an idea today we were going to read some of your questions, and we're still going to reference some of the questions that you guys asked, but they're definitely falling into certain categories. Like, one of them is definitely like contemporary controversial issues. There's also like controversial issues in the history of the church or the creation of the church. And then another one that I thought was pretty poignant, not poignant, what's the word I'm looking for? Foundational, yes. Is where are you getting all of the names of these people you think it's funny and people who studied it think it's funny, but
not everybody.
But not everyone understands who these people are.
Yes.
It was said in a very loving way.
It was said in a very loving way. And it does also set us up well to answer a few of the questions because, Leah said, we've gotten a lot of questions that are all fitting into good categories. So we thought that it would be best to kind of go through a history and answer some of those questions as we go through the history and tell you about some people.
So one of the questions that we got I think it was on Instagram, was what is our favorite theologian and where do they fit in the history? And I think that's something that would fit into this kind of intro.
Yeah.
What is, my husband asked me, what is a time period you wish you could delete from theology, theological, I would say contributions, if we want to do that.
Yeah. I have a hard time with that question.
Oh, am I? Oh, really? Okay. Well, the Nazis come to mind, but that's fine.
The Nazis come to mind, but like, that's not a time, like the whole time period isn't bad. It's just that, like, I have people I would want to delete, but not
Bonhoeffer,
like a whole time period, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want to delete Bonhoeffer.
Well, you didn't want to send John Cobb to the island, which, by the way, before we dig into this, we got one of the things we got more than questions was insanely interesting facts about some of these people
that
we decided to marry or date or
we have gotten
to the island.
We have gotten the tea has been spilled on Paul Tillich.
Paul Tillich?
Tillich is much more interesting than I knew about.
Paul Tillich's wife had a, basically like a tell-all book that she came out with after. And like, we should say none of it's substantiated as far as what I read.
Yeah.
Like, so if it is, then it is and send it our way. But
it is interesting. And it will be like, I think down the road, we would also like to talk about this whole, when we find out about theologians, what do we do with that?
Yeah. Yeah.
But, that's for another time.
It is, but I just wanted to thank you guys for sending us,
because we love that,
for correcting
anytime you have information. Just
although I told Christy, I was like, you know, if it's not like, you know, jail worthy, it could make Paul Tillich more interesting.
I absolutely think it makes him more interesting
if it's not like power plays young people and, you know, like assault. Then
what we also learned is that one of the neighbors like disowned Paul Tillich
because it was like, you're too much.
You're too much, like, for the neighbors,
right? I thought it was gonna be like, you're too boring for me, but no. Mm. So anyway, that's who Leah's married to now. She's stuck with that person for
that's okay,
good, for good or bad. So what I think we should do is maybe talk about just questions in terms of the history. So like of the theology. So we know that, of course, you have the biblical text as this kind of origin story, if you will, for Christian theology. And again, we're not Bible scholars, don't claim to be. You had a lot of Bible questions. So we're like,
we've got a lot of Bible questions, which we also feel like would be best served by having one of our Bible friends.
But we have Bible friends.
We'll bring them, it'll happen eventually.
And we have Jewish studies friends. And I think we'll bring them on.
Because one of the questions that we've gotten was like, why, if Jesus was Jewish, why aren't we?
Right.
And part of the history is the split from the Jewish tradition. But
why don't you take it away?
I'm just saying there's a substantial amount of theological difference, but the split really happened because
we're going back to our seminary days. We're remembering.
I have to pull up this file in my head. The split really happened.
It's Paul, isn't it? I mean,
well, Paul, so there was a time period. It was like, what, like, let's say Jesus, let's pretend like the calendar is correct for ease of math, because I can't do math.
So basically the Bible story happens as you got, you know, some of you may know, maybe you don't, but Christmas, you've heard it in a Christmas tale at some stage. And then Jesus dies, resurrected, and then the disciples basically go out.
The disciples go out to spread the message.
Yeah.
And for probably 30 to 40 years, these people are still considered Jewish and are still very much practicing as Jewish people. Most of the church are still Jewish people. Paul starts like bringing it out to the Gentiles, which just means non-Jewish people.
Yeah.
But mostly at that point, we're in like Greece, around the Mediterranean Sea.
And it kind of makes sense why he started with the Jewish people, because they would have understood at least the concept of this, you know, in the Jewish traditions. Again, I'm not going to touch on that because it's not my world, but that they had they had a Messiah that was coming. Yes. And the Christians essentially,
and it's a monotheistic religion,
right? And so it made sense that he started with that, because they would have been like, oh, we know that story, and he'd been like, oh, well, guess what, I've got this other, I got this caboose to the story.
Yeah, I've got this other stuff. And yeah, so, and then when he goes to the,
which
to
is
the
Jesus, Greeks, by the way, that's the,
it's Jesus.
Just to clarify,
Jesus is the caboose.
Jesus is the caboose. I know what this one's going to be called.
I was like, and there's the title. Mm-hmm. So
until you get to Muhammad, and then I don't know what's then. Is there an, there has to be another end to the caboose? Well,
oh my gosh! And then we've got Ba'ulah.
Oh God, this rum.
The rum is kicked in, y'all. So yeah, so for about, let's say 30 to 40 years, still Jewish sect, but then Nero burns down Rome and sacks Jerusalem and destroys the temple. And the Christians, who don't feel, and they're not called Christians at this point, but they don't feel any particular loyalty to Jerusalem or the temple anymore, because their focus is Jesus. They are like, let's get out of here, it's not safe. And this feels like a betrayal for the Jewish people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so this is really where the split happens in terms of religion.
There was a lot of different people at the time, I learned in seminary, that were claiming to be the Messiah. So Jesus wasn't like the only person. So they were probably pretty... Well,
they're just like, get,
they were over it at this stage.
They were over it. They were like, do you remember that Will Ferrell and Kristen Wiig presenting some kind of award, and they were like, get out of here. That was them. They were like, get,
they're
out,
like, but for real.
But for real, get out.
And so,
and then you get, which is typically called the patristic period, because of fathers.
The mothers were in the desert.
the fathers were establishing
the church.
They're in the desert being mystics, and they're fascinating. But
and so,
fathers,
and so we are today.
The fathers are having big fights and hullabaloos over doctrine. And so
my favorite word so far.
The patristic period is mostly like, what do we believe about Jesus, and what do we believe about the Holy Spirit? This is also when we get the Bible canonized, things like that.
And would you say the patristics were the first kind of academic theologians, anyway? Yes. I mean, of course, you could say like Jesus, but whatever.
Well, for further Christian theology, I would. Yeah.
Right.
I would say. I would say the patristics are really like, I know some people say like Paul is the first theologian. I think that's not true.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I don't. I mean, I think because also he was, no offense to you Pauline scholars, but like he was very confused in a lot of his writings.
Well, it's,
I think he was wrestling with the empire at the time, and I think those letters were very specific to these churches.
I also think there's a very specific, like, if you're establishing like differences, you're really part of that like ground floor. You know, you're not really doing academic theology at that point. You're just really trying to get like the ball rolling, you know?
Right. And I think that's right. I agree.
And that's fine.
It's fine.
That's what's necessary.
You know, Christy, Paul's fine.
He's fine.
He's fine. We don't know if he's fine, but he's fine.
Well, he's bald in all of the pictures.
Oh, so. How do they know? Do we have a, anyway?
No, but it's to demonstrate his sickness, his thorn in the flesh.
I'm sure the baldness is
the
exactly
baldness is his thorn in the flesh.
Please, we all know. Look, look. I'm sure Paul Tillich also would have been like, that's my baldness. No, dude. We know what it is now. They get something else, my friend. Anyway, maybe it was baldness. But here's, I think that's right, because to do academic stuff, you kind of have to have a foundation.
And you have to have some space.
Yeah, yeah.
To sit down and think about things.
And legitimacy. You can't just like, I can't start a church of Leah and just be like, and now we do theology.
Right. Like, people aren't going to be writing theology about what I'm just like musing in my own life, you know? Maybe. But the patristic period lasts for a while, and that's where you get people referenced like Augustine
on the island.
Augustine is on the island. Thomas Aquinas.
Oh my god, did you?
I heard that Beethoven doesn't like Augustine.
Beethoven has thoughts on Augustine. Beethoven can't hear himself scream, so he yelps like a demented banshee.
I have to also just amend my statement. Thomas Aquinas comes later. He is not a patristic.
I wasn't going to correct you, but
what?
Because I didn't know.
You get like a lot of heresy discussions. So, you know, Origen is condemned for heresy. And,
Aaron, I know the Arianism
stuff. Mm. So it's a lot of like, this is so, and
again, basically like a bunch of dudes just like reading one text and just like fighting about it.
It's just sorting like, shit, you know, it's sorting stuff out. It's like,
in Hamilton, God. Where Burr and Hamilton ride each other back and forth.
Yes, that's what it is.
Yeah, it is. And it's just but them basically saying, like, respectfully, but there's nothing respectful about it.
Respectfully, but not at all respectful.
No.
Yeah. And then you get also, you know, the legends of St. Nicholas punching somebody for saying that Jesus wasn't God and stuff. Like,
that was one of the big debates. So one of the things, too, I will say in the early church is that they weren't only establishing the church, like, in terms of, oh, we got to get organized. They're trying to figure out, like, what was the main kind of doctrines once they got the Bible established. Like, what are, and by doctrine, I mean, just, like, ways of life. Like, what are we going to believe to be
and,
true?
Like, what do we think are essential things to calling yourself a Christian?
Right.
Which
and
is
what,
a thing.
And why did Jesus have to die on the cross? Which was another question we got.
Another big question. So we've got a lot of doctrines that are, like, worked on and developed and named and stuff in this period. Mm-hmm. And a really helpful thing to look at for this period, if you want just like a quick what is going on, are the creeds, because that's typically what it is. It's like you pull up like the Apostles' Creed or the Nicene Creed or, you know, all those other creeds. There's so many creeds.
Westminster Confession.
No, that's later.
I know. I'm giving away my background.
And
of
you know,
Scotland.
So on one level, sometimes I think the patristic period looks like they're just doing like the simple stuff, but it's the like baseline things.
It is, but depending on what denomination you eventually adhere to, like within the Christian church, you might hold, like I joked about the Westminster Confession, but like you might hold to certain things a little bit more, like you might cling to a certain one of these, either early church fathers or eventually I would say the Reformation. Those are probably the two I would say big periods
for sure. And
at least in the Protestant tradition, I would say. Of course,
there's a few splits and there's a few major aspects of the patristic period to keep in mind. So firstly, because Paul's ventures took him around the Mediterranean Sea, a lot of those early patristics are actually in North Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So like Augustine is North African and a lot of those patristics are. And so when Constantine decides it's easier to be Christian and legalizes the religion, there's the first kind of major split, which is where Coptic Christianity comes from, because they did not get consumed by the what we now call the Roman Catholic Church.
Eastern Orthodox.
And Eastern Orthodoxy splits off in 1054 because of
is that in your brain or are you?
It is in my brain. It's just
nice.
It lives there.
That's
it lives
good.
There.
See who did systematics and who did modern theology. This might have to be a two-parter.
I will also say my deep sincere thanks to Catherine, my friend that I did seminary with, because she made two very brilliant PowerPoints to explain the history of the church and like theology that I used to teach for a long time. So that's part of why all of this is just in my brain.
Speaking of Catherine, I do want to just put in a side note because of the RAM that Christy sent me a random voice message that talked about the fact they had a ball or a prom.
Oh my god, yes. We did.
No, but we let me point out that you told us there you were only two of girls. And I am making no it was judgment.
Seminary wide. So it wasn't just our program, it was seminary. So the whole whole of Denver Seminary had a prom every year. They probably still do it. I don't know.
A prom?
It's called the Sela Gala.
Oh gosh. That's a lot. And again, making no assumptions about sexual behavior, whatever you want to do, I don't care. But only two girls, you are definitely in the minority.
Like, well, so because it was seminary wide, and we have a counseling program in the seminary, so that's where typically all the women were.
Oh my god, here we go.
yes, we had it every spring, and most of the time they had it at like a very nice place, and people would like wear gowns and suits and stuff like you're going to prom.
Did you go with Dustin?
Dustin would have caught on fire.
wouldn't we all, though, to be honest?
The one year I went, they decided instead to have a hoedown.
Oh my gosh.
I had to
in go Colorado? Houses, a hoedown? Also, was it called a hoedown?
They called it, I don't remember, but there was hay and they square dance. There was square dancing.
Oh.
The one and only time I've ever square danced in my life.
We had cultural awareness is what class was called. I kid you not. And our PE class was learning to square dance in life. It was called cultural awareness.
That's amazing.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So Catherine did not come to that with me. I will have you know.
Well,
there you go. We can talk about that betrayal later. But
we're bringing her on.
We're bringing her on. 1054 was the Great Schism, where they argued over the filioque clause.
Oh yeah, that clause.
So in the Latin.
This was the Jesus is all God. Yeah,
so yeah. To explain the Trinity, the council was saying that the Son is eternally begotten by the Father, and the Spirit is eternally processing from both the Father and the Son, and the Eastern Church wanted to take out the Son part, the filioque clause.
Can you guys see why I don't do systematic theology now?
It is. Yes, it is. But
can you imagine those conversations? Just like people. Yes. Because I do practical theology. All seriousness, I just imagine a bunch of white dudes in robes, just like.
To be fair, some of them
making pie charts. Making pie charts. Oh yeah, sorry. Varying colors. Sitting definitely dudes though. Sitting
dudes
around.
Dudes only dudes. Because remember, the women are in the desert.
They're in the desert.
Being mystics.
Being really fun.
Having encounters with Jesus. Themselves.
Which we can imagine. Like, we knew it from the start. We had it right in front of us.
It was. Always
true. The message was so clear. Like, do I want to be in a room debating the essence of Jesus, or do I want to be in the desert
with Jesus?
With Jesus and also wine.
And
probably wine that I'm making to sustain.
Maybe some other substances. I don't know.
Sure. I don't care. With a bunch of my friends and we're just shooting the shit.
I absolutely choose the mystics. And I
every time
from a person who does systematic theology.
And I mean, I think they kind of transcend everything. Like, I don't think that they fit into a category, because they were experiencing and systematizing in their own way, I think. Oh, which hits both of our fields.
It hits both, yeah. Well, because all theology is both systematic and practical.
Well, all theology is practical, but continue.
So, anyway, the patristic period is all of that stuff. And then we get into the scholastic period, which is Aquinas.
Mm.
And that's where you get the systematic theologies start. And the kind of breaking down of all of that. And also the Crusades. So this is the period that I feel I would nix if I was going to nix a whole period. Because the Crusades are just objectively terrible.
Yeah, but I did have an Aquinas scholar that I worked with at Edinburgh.
I don't mind Aquinas. I think he's fine. But, like, if I have to choose, if I have to choose a whole period, I still think good things came out of the scholastic period. I just...
You don't have to feel bad about it. Like, I mean...
I'm always going to feel bad about it.
Okay. I think that's your systematic burden to bear, but I don't think you have to. I would just ask the Reformation, to be honest.
You would ask the Reformation. Tell us about the Reformation, Leah.
Okay. Well, again, still not... I'm post-Vatican II, which is 1950. That's... or 1950s, whatever. That's my time to shine. It's post that. I do contemporary theology.
Yeah.
Even the systematic world. But I will say the Reformation, you know, you always learn about the Holy Trinity of Martin Luther, John Calvin, and Zwingli, who always gets like the third rank. They're like, oh, there was this guy. Where was he, in Switzerland or something? They're like, there's this other dude. So.
He was off his rocker.
Well, were they not? I mean, anyway,
particularly off his rocker though.
And I am at my very heart and soul a revolutionary. So basically, you get. And you can correct me, Christy, because you know more about this stuff than I do, but like the Reformation kind of started with people getting sort of pissed off about like I've read actually several explanations of why the Reformation occurred. One was like the printing press existed, and like
absolutely one of them. Yeah, yes, that, yeah. I mean, that's a huge part of it.
Yeah. And then it was just like this kind of a whole bunch of stuff that started to happen that basically gave agency to like the common person, I guess, is what I would say. And as a result of that, the church as it was at that stage, and then we're talking what, like 1500s,
1400s, 1500s. Late 1400s, early 1500s.
Yeah. Like, you know, the agency at that stage was basically the church tells you what to believe and to think. And we kind of see that if you listen to that history, you can see that all of these people are like, we're going to say what Jesus is and blah, blah, blah. And then, so the church just became a continuation of that. And basically just was like, here's the accepted things that we've established and you believe it. And also it's going to be in Latin. So sorry.
You don't know what's going on at all. I think the main things are that the church put up a huge wall between normal people and access to the religion that they were supposed to be believing, saying things like, you know, the Bible is only going to be in Latin, worship services are only going to be in Latin, BT dubs, no one speaks Latin, it's already a dead language. So
unless you're hyper educated,
but even most of the local priests wouldn't have been speaking Latin. So like, let's say you're a normal common like person living in the boonies, your local priest doesn't know anything either. So you have no access to the thing that you're supposed to be believing. And then they say stuff like, just give us money and you'll get into heaven.
Yes.
And that's
terrible. We've seen that before. And there were tables flipped and all kinds of stuff. So I think it's one of those things where it sort of recreates itself, right? Because it was this church that was very low key and like using the Gen Z terms, and it was organic, and then it became established, and it became the religion of the empire. And then as soon as it did that, it recreated, which happens, it recreated the history that it wanted to fight against. So, and that's what we see that through. I do history as well, and that's what we see perpetually. So I think with the Reformation, you have, you know, Martin Luther coming out and being like, you know, I don't, another theologian being like, I don't like what's happening here. Of course, we can't be short about it. He has to write
95 reasons the church sucks.
I got it mixed up with Jay-Z. I said
99 problems, and the church was all of them.
The church was every single
one of them. And also, have you ever done this? So Martin Luther was a sassy man. He rivals Shakespeare in terms of coming up with an amazing insult. No. And there is a website where you can, it's like the Martin Luther insult generator.
Oh my God. Oh no, you sent that to me. You did.
Get Martin Luther insults that are insults he wrote to the Pope, because he was writing some letters while he was in hiding.
Yeah, he was really mad at the established church, but he was a part of it. He was a priest, wasn't he?
He was a monk.
Yeah, yeah.
He was a lawyer first, which I think probably helps explain some things. And he got caught in a lightning storm, thought he was going to die, told God that he would become a monk if he didn't die. He didn't die, so he became a monk.
That feels legit.
And then he was, like, super... He had, like, massive, severe clinical depression. And he was super anxious about his salvation. So he was, like, beating himself every day and, like, super strict. And
oh, yeah. I remember that now, yeah.
And then he reads Romans.
And what he's part, like, of the Bible did he get the beating himself every day up about?
I don't think that that's in the Bible. I think that was just...
Oh, weird. That's weird.
Yeah, I think that was just... Which is what he decides to say. He's like, hey, actually, none of this is going to get me into heaven. I need to stop beating myself. It's all by the grace of God. So he tells me, writes the 95 Theses. He puts it on thing. The Pope is mad. He has to go into hiding because all of the other reformers had gotten beheaded before him.
Yeah, you don't. I mean,
and so in hiding is where he writes all of his insults. And he finally ended up being able to split from the church. So that was the main Reformation.
Now, I heard something that he was kind of deathbed regretful about that. Not that he had reformed the church, but that he felt bad about the splitting.
I don't think he ever intended to split. I think he always wanted to reform it.
Yeah, yeah,
He wanted change to happen, which, to be fair, does happen. The Catholic Church also goes through its own Reformation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Gets rid of some of the bad things that they were doing. Not all of them, but some of them. So there's general reform, but there's the main Reformation. There's the Radical Reformation, which is where you get the Puritans and the Anabaptists. Who are like, you know, we really need to focus on living in a very
relationship
intensely strict way so that we know we're never sinning against God because we're pretty sure God hates us.
Did you know the Puritans like would wrap themselves in like cloth and like sew themselves up, but would lay next to their betrothed in a bed?
Yes.
But they would like sew it up. Like, why could you not just go out to, like, the town tavern? I don't, or just the town square.
Anything other than, I mean, they were just very deeply concerned.
Like, why do you have to be in the actual bed with the person?
Go, like, somewhere else.
I mean, that feels like, they're like, well, we're going to sew you up. I can think of a million different ways to do that. Like, just sit in a parlor. I've watched Bridgerton. Like, sit in a parlor and read a book or something. Like, have, like, a little chat.
Right? So many other options.
I digress. I rum digress.
The Puritans were a lot. Those are the ones that moved to the States.
That I write about in my book, Bad Theology.
Yep.
Available now.
Ooh, which I got today. My copy came in the mail today. It was very exciting.
I could have given you one of those. Well, you're referenced in the thank you list. So I think you should deserve a book. Although Salem is also referenced and didn't get a book. So
I am going to make you sign it. That's for
sure. You don't have to make me do anything. People were like, will you sign this? I was like, yes. Well, but it was imposter syndrome, not like, this is weird. Like, it was 1,000%.
Like, why do you want this? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then we also get the Anglican Reformation, which is where the Church of England comes from, which many people attribute to Henry VIII wanting a divorce. But was definitely more in the works prior to that. It's just that they were, like, trying to get him to separate from the church because politically England would have more power if they weren't under the Pope. And then, like, too, also, some of them were, like, genuinely devout and wanted to reform the church.
I feel like if you want to learn about this period, you just need to watch The Crown, Bridgerton, or...
The Tudors.
The Tudors, yeah, or Outlander, if you want. You can learn all about theology wherever
you are. The Anglican Reformation gives us the Church of England. The main Reformation gives us Lutheranism. The Radical Reformation gives us the Anabaptists and then Baptists, etc.
Essentially, after the Reformation, everything just splits to the hell and back. I mean, it goes crazy.
Everything is just splitting all over the place. Yes.
And then, because it come to find out, much like your like college literature class, a lot of people have opinions on the book.
Mm-hmm. And
they don't all match.
There's not a really good way to be like, this is definitely what it's saying, because it's a complicated book that is written in ancient languages that very few people read.
Which I think actually begs the question in some ways at this stage of like at the Reformation stage, is it, I should say, is like, is it better to have this kind of dictatorship over religion where you stay together, or is it better to have freedom of thought where you split and split and split and split?
I think that's a good question. I think it also,
I don't want to call the Catholic Church a dictatorship, but you know what I mean? A very, I'll say authoritarian. Like they were like, this is what you should think and believe in. So you unify the church under that one kind of umbrella.
And I think too, I mean, I think there's definitely pros and cons, because for sure with opening it up, you also get a lot more people doing a lot more damage. You know, like there's not a control anymore for like how do people learn how to read the Bible.
Yeah, because one's like power and then one's like manipulation. Like the Protestant splits, or you can manipulate it any way you want.
You can do whatever you want with this, and now we can all fight more.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, definitely there's a lot more.
That would be my period, I have to say, because I just think that like it probably needed to happen, and I, you know, but like the reform needed to happen. I would be okay with it not being this insane like web of denominations with, you know, I mean, but you know, I would think that because I have the bad theology stuff, but then I'm also a Disciples of Christ minister who says no creeds. We don't even do creeds.
You don't even like creeds. I mean, it's very complicated. This is what I'm saying. The scholastic period did a lot of good things for us, but it also gives us the Crusades. Well, I feel like this is a two-part history.
I think so.
Lesson.
So but... I can lead the charge into the 1900s. Yes. Or we can lead up to the 1900s.
You'll take over for the 1900s next time. I think because that's more your area.
Yes, it is. I'm basically just drinking rum and thinking about seminary right now. But
but we do have an unscripted question.
Mm-hmm.
So excited to ask you. And the topic, because I got to choose this week, the topic I gave Leo was prophets.
Which I pulled out, speaking of seminary, the one book I have on the prophets by Abraham Heschel.
Oh, that's such a good name to be writing a book about the prophets.
Yeah, he's apparently born in Poland, professor at the Jewish Theological Seminary in New York. This is a very old book, though, so
yeah,
who knows where he's at now. We know that life.
Do you want to ask me your question first, then?
No, I don't. I'm going to let you ask me first.
All right, here's my question for you. It's so much simpler, I think.
Oh, God.
Have you ever met a prophet?
Ah, so you went the route that I was gonna go.
That's okay, we can both tell our stories.
Okay. Have I ever met a prophet? So I am of the belief, this is my personal theology, absolutely, that I think there's continuous revelation. Like, I think we're selling ourselves a little bit short by closing the canon.
I actually agree with you, yeah.
And I think other religions are better at keeping it open, mm-hmm, than we are as Christians. I say we being Christian. Yeah. And so, have I met a prophet?
I mean, it doesn't have to be a real prophet, but have you ever met anyone who identified as a prophet?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean... I grew up in the South, so every baseball game there was a prophet. if you want to go that route, I was trying to think like
a real one.
A real, I mean, I'm sure they think they're real. And maybe they are. Maybe they are. I don't know. But I had an interesting sort of interaction once with a psychic, actually.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I went to a psychic and in Atlanta actually, and it was really interesting because a lot of people are like, oh, devil, blah blah blah, and of course, like if you study like spiritualism, you'll know that it's really very little to do with the devil. I don't think, I mean, if the devil was real, they probably would have been okay with like introducing that in, but they were mostly just trying to figure out like what was kind of truth and that kind of thing. But and this person told me a lot of things, and a lot of times people are like, oh, they're charlatans. Like I recently listened to another podcast that we both love that talked about who was the big magician guy?
Houdini,
yeah, and how much he hated spiritualism, because although he hated it because he did tricks, but he thought they were like tricks that people,
they're like illusions,
that people bought into, like they were entertained by it. He thought that spiritualism, which was like the sort of, you know, psychics and, you know, reading palms and all that stuff, was a manipulation of people to take their money.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so I think, but I will say, this person told me wildly insane specific things that, having studied all of the different ways that both spiritualists and prophets and, you know, people who are cult leaders and everything else can like read you. Mm-hmm. Like it was like, I see you on this specific day in this specific place in this little town, and you're like 12. And I'm like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't explain it. But, so were they a prophet? I mean, I don't know.
I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. Or an exceptional guesser, which is maybe what the prophets were. Social justice exceptional guessers. But, you know.
Really in tune.
Really in tune, yeah. So that sounds a bit frivolous because it's not like someone who's like leading the cause to change things. I've definitely met, because I do a lot of peace building stuff, I've met people who tried to change things.
Yeah.
And I consider those people to be prophets.
I would too. I would say that that's what is, I think, more in line with what you see in the Bible as well, is that the prophets are about like righting wrongs that are going on and like being more in line with God's will, and not necessarily like, this is what's going to happen in the future.
Right. And so I've worked with people, peace building folks in Scotland and Northern Ireland. And then here I do a project on sort of racial justice in the South. And I think all the people I work with, I think, are prophets in that sense. Now, again, if you want to talk about people being able to predict the future versus people who are wanting to change society, it kind of depends on your version of prophet in a way, because when I read them, I'm like, they feel like they have a direct line to something, that they're seeing the future, but then also they're wanting to change things. I don't know that I've ever met anyone who has both, like who's both.
Yeah, that would be.
Well,
that
my
would
question,
be something
that would be amazing. Well, so that's my answer. So yes, my answer is yes.
Your answer is good
on both of those.
All
Luckily, I didn't say I'm a prophet, and that you're now in my cult. So, watch out.
Oh man.
My question was going to be, have you ever met a modern day prophet? But now I get to ask you another question, which is, speaking of those. Which, you know, if we talk about prophets being people who are social justice warriors, but also kind of can have a connection to God in which they can sort of see something beyond mm-hmm. the present, who is your favorite of the prophets and why?
Ooh, who is my favorite of the prophets? That's a good one. I feel like when I was growing up, I had a real like love for Elijah.
Good name as well. I like that name.
Great name. He just seemed real intense, and I have always really liked intense people.
Is that was Dustin's problem?
I'm basically just constantly attracted to the most intense people you can find. But in my older days. I feel like I really, now I feel more drawn to like the smaller prophets, like Amos.
Mm-hmm.
Amos feels like a good one. Hosea, even. I'm like, these people are interesting, you know?
And do you see them more as like, I have the direct connection, I can see what's happening, or like this sort of, we need to change all these things, or like the great combination of both?
I think it's a combination of both. I think when you're looking at them there, it's that they're seeing what's going on in a really intense way, but also like in tune with, again, I'm just going to say the will of God, and and like this, and the nation is not in tune with the will of God. And I'm here to speak to that. And I think that one of the things I find most interesting is how like people listened to them so much, you know, and we're like, oh yeah, okay, we got to change course here. Obviously not all the time and not quickly, but like,
I think the New Testament kind of lacks some of the
prophets. It does. I feel like it's a thing we really need to bring back, honestly. I don't know how you go about doing that.
You and I? How do we start that?
Let's get some prophets.
A GoFundMe?
A GoFundMe to start advertising for some prophets. I mean, that's my answer. I think I'm going to go Amos. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Very interesting.
Why do you think there wasn't more follow-up, more New Testament prophets in the New Testament, do you think?
I mean, I would say the simple answer is Jesus.
Okay. All right. All right, Bart. By the way, we're coming up to Carl Bart. Oh gosh, I got to cover him.
You have to talk about Bart.
Good Lord. I'm
so excited about that.
Germans, they're coming. The Germans are coming.
The Germans are coming.
Yeah, I guess so. But it would be nice also, because like the prophets, I mean, in the Old Testament had Abraham, and I know like they're not the same, but like you had this patriarch, and that's very important, and you got the prophets later on to sort of, in some ways, correct. They were corrective, and like,
I mean, wouldn't it be so nice if, I mean, I guess you could argue that like Martin Luther is a prophet in that sense. That he's not a great example of this, but like
he won't. You know,
I mean, he did. There,
look,
he did
the Luther, the Lutherans who are listening are going to have questions.
I mean, I'm appreciative because I do think that a lot of things need
more. I'm the one that was deleting the Reformation.
You were deleting the Reformation.
I think you're fine. You were deleting the Scholastics. Those Thomas people are going to have questions for you, Opa.
Thomas people, I never remember what they're called.
Thomas,
that's it. I do think there's been some, but it would be nice, wouldn't it, just to have somebody come along right now who was like had the kind of power, I guess, to say the church is not doing what the church needs to be doing.
And not be like a neo-Nazi. Yeah, that'd be amazing.
Yeah. And to fix things in the correct way.
As we deem it. Good theology.
Good theology, as Leah has described in her book.
That you can get now.
Get it on the link on our Instagrams. Speaking of.
Yes.
We will pick this up next week, but make sure you are, liking and sharing and all of those things. Instagram, Theology on the Rocks.
It helps us. Thank you.
Twitter, Theology Rocks. Yeah, we're really excited. So many people are really giving us great feedback and encouragement stuff. So we appreciate all of you guys. And
for sure. And just remember, Jesus is the caboose.
Jesus is the caboose.
Unless you're Muslim, and then he's not.
Or Baha'i.
Or Jewish, or any other freaking religion on the face of the planet. But that's how the Christians back then saw it.
Jesus is the caboose.
Oh, God.
We're going to have such great merch later.
Oh, my God. I know. I'm not being super sessionist, please, guys. I know I'm within my own context. I'm telling you. All right. The rum is gone, and so is my brain.
We'll talk to y'all later.
Bye.